Hello and welcome to the How Did They Build It series of interviews with DNN Creative Magazine. This is Lee Sykes from dnncreative.com and today we are talking to Brad Schaefer from the Schaefer Design Group. Hi Brad, how are you?
Doing good, how are you doing Lee?
I'm pretty good, thank you. Could you start by explaining who you are, what you do, and your background with .NET Nuke?
Sure. I'm the owner and founder of the Schaefer Design Group, a loose affiliation of a group of designers and programmers that focus specifically on .NET Nuke websites. And we do everything from corporate identity to complete interactive hosted e-commerce websites.
Okay. Thanks for that. Today we are going to look at the whole web design process, right from the very beginning of the first consultation, the steps involved, the conclusions made, and how all of this information is applied when creating a website. We're going to focus on one of the websites that Brad has designed to provide a working example. So Brad, which website are we going to discuss and what's its purpose?
The website we're going to discuss today is a brand new company, actually, that has a pretty exciting technology. It's called a Cryo Response. And basically, the purpose of the website is to advertise a new technology for the firefighting and hazard material market. Not necessarily an exciting market, but they're using CO2 pellets to suppress fire, and so it's a very new technique and one that's environmentally safe and hopefully very profitable for the company that's trying to launch it.
Okay, let's have a look at the initial planning of a website. Could you talk us through the initial consultation phase for this website, the conclusions you made from the initial consultation, and how you use this information to research and plan the design of the website?
Sure. This company was basically in R&D for the last 5 to 7 years and have recently come into the production, let's say, level of the business. And so they needed a brand. They needed to sort of show that they're a viable company now and start soliciting business. So the first thing that they needed to do was come up with a logo, a tagline, and their positioning, their brand promise, and some of their differentiations from what would be competitors. And so we actually started at the very beginning with this company, all the way from logo design.
Okay, so what do you discuss in the first consultation?
The first consultation is typically depending on where they want to start. I mean, some people actually have a fairly set brand and other people are starting from the very beginning. So, you know, with this one, we did start at the very beginning. So, you know, one of the first questions we have, we actually have a branding document that we sort of assist. There are a series of questions that we give to potential clients to help them sort of figure out what it is key for their business. And it's different from industry to industry. But one of the things is, you know, what is their key message? You know, trying to boil down to one or two sentences, either a positioning statement or a mission statement. I mean, it's been said many times, many ways, but basically it's a very succinct, what is it that you do? How do you do it better than other people? And what makes us want to do it with you? And so finding those key messages is probably the first step. And then from that, that's where we sort of design the logo. And that's actually one of the hardest pieces, in my opinion, other than designing the website itself, is crystallizing that key message into some sort of iconographic figure that is representative and stylish.
So what was the brief for the website?
The brief for this website was actually the branding document that I discussed, which is typically about a two-page document of the questionnaires that they fill out and then give back, and then we can sort of enter into a meeting at that point, so that we can be on sort of the same page of what they're expecting and what we can deliver.
So following from the logo, in what order do you create the following? So from the content, the logo, skin, navigation and menu, and the layout, how do you choose this order?
Well, some of it can actually run in parallel. I would say that the skin, menu layout, and logo can all run in parallel to some extent, because you can sort of flip-flop. But really, the two pieces that have to come first, in my opinion, is I don't think it's mentioned here, but is the corporate identity. So, like, what are the fonts and colors that we're going to be using? And typically that comes along with the logo. And then from there, we actually can sort of spin off of those and then develop the skin. So sort of once I have a good feeling of, okay, these are the color palettes and the fonts, because fonts have a lot that they can say, and they can be corporate, they can be stuffy, they can be cutting edge, they can be grunge. I mean, so you've got a lot of flexibility just in the fonts that you use. So I would say, you know, in order, probably logo first, look and feel second, especially with DNN, because you have the ability, you know, once you get the look and feel nailed, you still have the ability to change the navigation quite a bit. I mean, you can skin drop downs. There's lots of plugins now that you can use for navigational techniques. You can have side navigation, top navigation. I would say a lot of that sort of is more dependent on the look and feel, getting the client to agree to, okay, yeah, we want tab looking like things across the top, or we really like drop downs, or we only want left hand navigation, or we want a combination of both. So I think hopefully that covered the order. That's typically the order that we go in, and that's for the basics. Then if they need, depending on their business, they may need object modeling and some UML design for figuring out use cases and sort of getting into the deeper aspects, if they're not specifically more of a brochureware type of site, but more of a an e-business or an e-commerce site or a solutions-based site.
Okay, so before you begin work on the layout, style, or graphics of a site, what information do you need first?
Any supporting imagery that the company might have would certainly help a lot. You know, some people have pictures or logos or looks that they've had in the past that they need to keep consistent with, especially more established businesses. If they're startups, then, you know, I've gone off a napkin for the most part. I mean, it's basically, you know, this is what we need, this is what we have to say, sort of give me something. And so at that point, you sort of go off your branding document and say, okay, what imagery do we think supports these key messages? And you basically throw them two or three logos, you work from there, and at the same time, you throw two or three look and feels at them to give them a choice to start from, and then sort of let them wean you down and wean themselves down a path of what it is that ends up being the eventual site. Very rarely, actually, does it exactly follow any straight path, and most of the time people sort of change their mind or go back to things or flip-flop back and forth. So there's definitely a lot of give and take with the clients.
Okay, then. So what considerations do you make regarding usability and accessibility?
Usability and accessibility. I would say the biggest one that we start with, or I currently like to start with, is the fact that there are still a lot of people in 800 by 600. Although I'd really love to design a site at a higher resolution, I think you have a lot of mobile professionals on laptops that you have to consider. And so for the most part, most of the sites that we design are set at 780 pixels, which is just wide enough to allow a right-hand scroll to scroll up and down the side. And then as far as usability, making sure that the fonts that you're picking, both for your text and your navigation, are web-safe fonts, fonts that come default installed on most everybody's operating systems. And so, and for the most part, I would say XP. But there is, you know, a 3-5% Mac market, and we have a growing percentage, although it's very varied in percentage-wise, for Firefox and Opera and the like.
Why did you choose .NET Nuke to build the website?
I'm pretty much choosing .NET Nuke to build all my websites now. It allows for the reuse of standardized modules that I've gotten fairly good at designing with at this point. And it's easy enough to teach to, let's say, wannabe administrators, clients that, for whatever reason, really feel that they want the ability to update their own site, add their own content. Now, I find that a lot of people actually sort of head down that path by adding content and then actually fall back to us as a designer and say, could you clean this up for me now? But DNN actually, in my opinion, its most power comes from the security layer that's built into it, the ability to actually give either sections of a site access to certain individuals by role, or give the ability to have distributed or multiple people and inside of an organization work on building content. You know, so it's not necessarily the command and control of just this web designer where your business is locked to this one guy that knows how to program your site. It's a lot more open to different levels of the organization.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of .NET Nuke's really powerful features. So we've covered the initial consultation stage. Let's move on and look at the actual content of a website. In your opinion, Brad, what content should a business include in a website?
Content is really dependent on the industry and the services that the business is trying to provide, in my opinion. I would say that probably 80 to 90% of the websites that we design are actually brochureware. People that don't have products that would necessarily sell really well in a strictly e-commerce sense. They're not selling books. They're not selling something very tangible that a shopping cart would work for. And so, you know, basically those brochureware type content sites are going to be very different than the content of someone like a business process management website. Something that is internal or private or, you know, specific to an industry like real estate mortgage and or environmental control form-based things or medical form processing. So the content that's on it is really dependent on the audience that's going to be using it. One of the things that I like to say to my clients sort of up front is really what a website is it's a decision support system. Every single link is a decision. Every single button is a decision. And so what you're trying to do from the moment they hit that home page is lead them down a path that you want them to go down. And that's by giving them the choices to lead them down that path. So I think the first thing to do is figure out what is the user there to achieve to do, how do you provide the things for them to do it, and how do you get them to where you want them to go on your website. So what is the end-all be-all task? For some people, it's simply still leading them down to the point where they can pick up a phone and call someone to ask more information or make a reservation or talk to a salesman to get what they want. In some cases, it's completely any service, so you know the end-all be-all is the Visa card number and shipping address at the end. So, but it really depends on the industry.
Do you carry out any keyword research before creating the content? And what methods do you use to research keywords?
You know, I would have to admit that that's probably one of the weaker areas of our business. We do some Google AdWords, and that allows us to sort of do some research on what keywords, how expensive they are, but that's not necessarily the best indicator of which keywords are the best to use. We do use Web Position Gold. That allows us to sort of find out what keywords a URL ranks on different search engines. But beyond that, I would say we recommend that, you know, our clients go in, and a lot of them are self-administered clients now. So we recommend that they go in and actually put in the descriptions and the page description fields and the keywords in their keyword area of the page and the modules. But beyond that, I would say that's an area that if there are any experts out there, certainly we would love to hear from you. You know, I certainly have noticed that since DNN 3 moved to the friendly page naming concept, that a lot of our clients have responded they're showing up a lot higher in some of the major search engines. In fact, one of them just showed up as number 2 for one of the keywords that they were looking for in Google. And so I got a nice flower email from them because they thought it was something that we did, but it was simply that we migrated them from 2 to 3 and turned on the friendly name search or friendly URLs. So, but honestly, that's an area that's tough to keep up with because the search engines are constantly changing their algorithms of how they rank order things.
Okay, so how do you decide on the structure of a website? For example, what information should be on the home page, and how should this lead into the further content within a website?
Sure. Ironically, that question is almost exactly backwards of how we go about doing it. Certainly, we do show what the home page is going to look like in some of the look and feels that we create, but we actually create subpages first. And I found that, in my experience, the home page probably should be the last thing to be designed, because a lot of times people either get a little too ambitious with the amount of content that they try and provide and actually don't have a lot of the content to back it up or fill it out. And so what ends up happening is you sort of have this massive hierarchy that they start on, and then they sort of embark down this path and they realize, oh, we really want to do this section, but we don't have the content for it, or we don't have the imagery to support it, or, you know, or what we thought was going to be important on the homepage isn't important on the homepage. And it's really only by doing the sort of the subsections of the site to find out, hey, where do we have content? What is the message of that content that we can link people to those pages? Because really that's where the content is. The homepage, although supremely important because it's the first thing that people see, really is nothing but a link factory to the content. And so if you're not providing that that content to begin with, then you're not going to have a good idea of what it is. And I think you'll appreciate going to a website where that homepage looks really, really nice, and then every other page underneath it just either has no content or looks nothing like that. And I think that that's a disappointment both for the user and for the business if they don't have the supporting content to do it. So for us, we actually like to do the homepage last.
Sure, that seems like good advice to me. I noticed that you use audio on some of your websites. Why do you use audio, and is there any evidence which demonstrates it increases sales?
Yeah, we just recently started using audio. Actually, it's a third-party audio provider that we've used, and it's in fairly limited scope. And what we've done is we've used it for testimonials. Actually, there's a couple of clients that use it for that are speakers, public speakers, and they use it for advertising so you can hear their voice. But for the most part, we use it for testimonials. And a lot of the new clients of some of the people that we have used this for in a testimonial fashion really like the realness of it. And the way that this particular third-party service works is actually a free number phone call that you give out with a key code, and you say, you know, if you liked my service, yeah, hey, could you leave me a referral or a testimonial? And so they call this number, they type in their PIN code, it's free to them to use, and then that instantly gets popped into this website for them to pick and choose from. And I think that, you know, if you're trying to establish credibility in a business, there's no better way than having real people that aren't scripted telling how what a great experience they had with your product or service. One of my clients is an acupuncturist. He's a doctor. And, I mean, he has just had some of the most real, glowing testimonials come out of this voice that there's no way that you could possibly try and communicate that in text, at least not with the emotion and the depth of what these testimonials mean. And I think it's been a really good selling point for him, because people that come to his website can hear that, and they sort of relate to that, and so they build trust, and that credibility is built. And so that's why we've started using audio.
That sounds really good. Do you have the details for that service?
What I will do is I will give you the details so you can post it with this interview and with some of the supporting content I'm providing for the interview.
Great. And regarding the content for the Creo Response website, did you have to adapt the content or design to fit in with .NET Nuke?
In this case, it sort of came prepackaged, and it's a little secret that I necessarily didn't want to share with my design team. I have a group of designers that I work with, and I often compete against them for look and feels to keep them on their toes. But in this case, I actually cheated a little bit, and there's a great, this is going to be a little secret I'll give out, there's a great Skinner out there by the name of Tyler Fawcett. And if you haven't come across his site, I think there's links from it from the .NET Nuke site. And this skin that they ended up choosing is actually a DNN skin that Tyler had done that got adapted. But my design team doesn't know that, so we won't share that with them. So I cheated a little bit and used that and just sort of threw some of my own graphics over the top. So it was a fairly quick adaption for us, but that's only because I knew where to look for it. Most of the imagery itself actually was either stock imagery that we bought from some of the stock image websites, or imagery that was provided by any of the subcontracted design teams, like the Flash designer. I have a subcontractor that I sub out most of the Flash work for, and he provided that imagery. So it's sort of a mix match of imagery, but for the most part, yeah, it was designed to fit with DNN.
Okay, let's have a look at the logo for a website. What are the factors or considerations that go into creating a logo?
Ooh, you know, logo design is probably one of the hardest pieces of graphic design, in my opinion, out there, simply because often you have 2 to 3 messages that you're trying to convey, and you have to convey it in this completely crystallized iconographic form or text form, and the text has to just be right on with that message, or these images have to be right on with the message, and you don't want it to look too much like anything else. It has to look unique, it has to look fresh. So, you know, designing it is basically, that's the creative juice. That's where the magic really happens. And, you know, basically I use a technique I call like brainstorming, where I will sit down with a piece of paper typically before I even design it on the computer and sort of sketch out by hand on a napkin or a piece of paper just concepts that I think, okay, you know, what is this? You know, like in this case it was natural fire suppression is their tagline. So, you know, how do I encapsulate the fact that, okay, as this CO2 melts, it becomes, or these, it's actually dry ice pellets. As these dry ice pellets melt, they actually form these sort of pockets of CO2 that literally suck the oxygen right out of the air so the fire can't continue to spread. And how does one convey that? And so, and I take that to the design team and I say, hey, look, this is the message that we're trying to convey. You know, each of you come up with a couple of concepts here, and then we sort of pool it all together and we throw up 8 to 10 different concepts and try and lay them out as best as possible. And then at that point, we let the customers decide. So, and a lot of times they don't even pick some of our favorites, and which is disappointing, but that's something you got to learn to deal with, is sort of take your ego out of this, and the client is always right. So whatever they want to, whatever they would be happy to pay for is exactly what we want to provide them. And so actually, I'll provide you, Lee, with some supporting images to sort of show you. We did actually, in the cryo response, have about, I think, 6 to 8 logos, that logo concepts that we started with, that we sort of whittled down to 2, and then we revised those, and then that got selected into 1, and then sort of changed colors and fonts a little bit. I think seeing the breadth of the logos that we came up with gives you an idea of how the process happens.
Following the logo, let's have a look at the creation of a skin. Where do you start when first designing a skin, and how does the logo affect the design of the skin?
Yeah, the skin actually, I would say, is separate from what we call as a look and feel. A lot of times, a client has an idea of what they think their site should look like. And so the skin is actually the, I would say, more the programmatic side of bringing that look and feel to life. The skin is the CSS and the HTML and the modules and the choice of technology sort of behind all that. I think all of that together is technically the skin. So for me, you know, starting with the skin starts with simply a JPEG, usually. It's a simple graphical image that sort of conveys this is what it's going to feel like. And a lot of times we'll use, and I don't know how technical the audience is here, but we use lorem ipsum for text, which is a 300-year-old Latin group of text that looks like words, that means nothing. And we use that specifically because we don't want the content to get in the way of what the feel is. And that's sort of really the first step in starting a skin.
So what research do you need to make before you begin creating a skin? And what were the factors that affected how you designed this skin?
Yeah, the research going in to make a skin really depend on the look and feel itself. How achievable is it to get the navigational tabs to look like tabs with the sort of the built-in .NET Nuke modules? How achievable is it to get the Flash animation to integrate well with the rest of the feel, and what's it going to look like as the animation flows? You know, is it going to have a transparent background? Is it going to be blocky over the top? You know, what is the navigation in general going to be? Is there going to be sort of data-driven left-hand side sub-navigation or not? And so those factors are really technology factors that you have to sort of figure into the look and feel.
Okay, how do you decide on the color scheme and fonts for a skin? Are there any particular techniques you use?
Yes, it's a truckload of trial and error. It's sitting in front of Visual Studio with a CSS editor and flipping back and forth and back and forth until you finally get what you want and it works in all the browsers. I wish there was a cut and dry, easy way to say that all comes together, but really that's sort of the labor of love is sort of testing it in multiple browsers and really knowing all of the different layers of what a skin is produced with. And so, you know, for this audience, the skin starts in our process starts as HTML. That HTML gets marked up into ASPX or ASCX controls, and then laid out in a couple of different ways. We actually sort of start with the panes first, and the panes are the sort of the major templates of how 90% of this content site is going to look. A lot of people probably would stick to maybe one or two skins, or maybe perhaps one skin for the entire site, but we find that it's a lot easier if you've designed those subpages and have a concept of what they're going to look like to actually provide a specific page or skin for those pages that makes it really easy for non-designers to lay it out correctly. So, for instance, if there is a in your main content area a header image that goes all the way across the top, then you want to make sure that that skin provides that for them if at all possible, so that it's easy to maintain. Or if there's a two-column layout in the text, you want to make sure that that skin provides that. And it may work some, you know, there some of the skins out there try and be in a be-all, you know, fit-all skin for everything, and we find that a lot of times that just doesn't work. So we will come up with a couple of actual different skins and then apply those different skins to different pages.
Okay, how long did you spend designing the skin?
Oh, that's the $5,000 question, isn't it? I would say that I really got to cheat a lot in this case because the skin was designed by Tyler. Unbeknownst to him, we bought it, or I guess he knew when we bought it, but and then it really came together quite quickly after that. And I like using Tyler's stuff because his CSS is so well documented and so well laid out, and the classes that he uses are very, very clean and crisp and concise and reusable, and so I would say that, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the skin adaption was probably 2 hours. I mean, didn't take that long at all, really. Filling it in with content actually took a lot longer. Laying out the flash took a little bit of time. So I'd sort of have to go back through this project to figure out, you know, when you're talking skin, is it just the skin pieces or is it the skin plus the content? Because it all sort of, it all mingles together in order to become the website.
Sure. Are there any checks that you should make to a skin before releasing it on an official website?
Yes, load it in Firefox. Load it in Opera. If you can find someone that has a Mac, and I'm really a Mac-friendly person, but the audience isn't large enough to for me to justify spending that much time on it with Safari because the standards seem to be so different. But you know, if you can get a Mac, you know, they're very vocal people, so you know, make sure it works on a Mac, make sure it works good in Firefox, make sure it looks good in IE, test it in different resolutions. A lot of times, you know, I've seen people that design a site, they must run in 1600 by 1200, and you know, God forbid you run in 800 by 600, because you only get half the screen, or most of the important content is below the fold, so to speak, the fold being the bottom of the standard monitor. So test. That's the best.
Okay, and before we move on, do you have any tips for the listeners with regards to creating a skin?
Yes. If you use Photoshop, make sure you become familiar with Image Ready. Image Ready is really good at, I mean, there's Dreamweaver, there's Fireworks. I'm a Photoshop man, so Image Ready is my right-hand partner in this one. It allows you to do animated GIFs. You can create and cut up sections of site, and it lays out the images, cuts the images for you, does the HTML markup, and what's really nice is the ability to, once you have your skin designed and you've got your cuts made, you can actually just select like 3/4 of the screen. Let's say, you know, the rest of the skin's design, you're just working on a content section of the middle of the page. You can just highlight those and then export them out, and it'll just export just what you're looking for. And so you can start laying out some of the inner pieces of the skin, and make sure that it's going to work with the skin in general. And other than that, I would say that any program that does it too much for you is going to really remove your ability to fine-tune it. And if you don't know HTML in and out, then you're going to have a hard time dealing with, you know, why don't things line up in Firefox, or you know, why doesn't, you know, this table, why is it, you know, vertically center when I don't have content, or why doesn't expand all the way when I say it's 100% width? There aren't any shortcuts for that. You just have to know the HTML. You have to know the CSS. If you can find a good CSS guy, hold on to him, because the differences in CSS from browser to browser and the incompatibilities really make the difference in the final product.
Okay, thanks. Let's quickly have a look at the menu. How did you create the tabbed look of the menu?
Oh, once again, the tabbed look of the menu is basically a Tyler thing, but they are background images. In the there's a the default menu for DNN is the sole part menus, and you have in the sole part menus through your CSS the ability to define background images, and that's something that is inherent in CSS. You can assign a background colon URL of whatever it is that you want. And so there are really three pieces. Each of these tabs have a left rounded piece, a center square piece, and a right rounded piece, all of which have a drop shadow. And so it's sort of built in that fashion. It's the left side of the content area, the right side of the content area, and the content area itself. So, and then the key on after that is just making sure that your colors are transparent for that container layer, I believe it's called, the container CSS, and then has a matching color for the drop-downs.
I noticed that you've used a flash animation on the left-hand side of the website, which is a great way of grabbing a visitor's attention and delivering a message to the visitors of a website. Do you have any comments on the use of Flash in websites, and why did you decide to use Flash on this website?
Sure. Flash is a great product if it's used for the right reasons. Flash recently, with the MX, has the ability to tie into .NET and therefore tie into a SQL backend, and I've actually seen some fairly fantastic stores completely done in Flash. Although I don't know that that's necessarily the best use of Flash. To me, Flash is best used to convey a short message or to convey things that are difficult to explain in a flat image-only fashion. And so, for the most part, I'll use Flash. For instance, if there's a process that would be very difficult to describe by just an image, then perhaps Flash is the thing to do. If you're trying to sort of bring some movement to a very still page, Flash is another thing to do to convey a message. A lot of times you'll see Flash as header sections of home pages. And the reason is it allows that little bit of freshness and movement and allows the ability to convey that message. And that message is sort of sent at you more of in a television fashion.
Okay, let's move away from the graphics and have a look at the modules. Which modules have you used within this website?
Sure. For the most part, almost all of the modules are text HTML modules, with the exception of the front left page, which is an announcements module, and a links module onto the right. Now, one of the other sort of tricks to have in the bag, certainly, is the ability to use containers. Containers are a fantastic technique in .NET Nuke. And what it is the ability to surround a module with a specific look. To the extent that that container can call on its own CSS, and regardless of the rest of the site, can actually look a specific way. So if you actually have created some really creative, reusable containers, you can reuse these on multiple sites and in multiple projects, and that creates the same standard professional look, but you don't have to recreate it every time. And so they can pick this container from anywhere. As far as modules, I believe the only there's a couple of custom modules on the Cryo response site. FAQs is one. That comes with DNN. It just needed a little bit of style pickup, and it looks a little bit better. But for the most part, text HTML is what we use most.
How did you create the form on the partner application page that's under the partner's header in the menu? And how is this information from the form delivered to the owner of the website?
Sure. There's a couple of actually good modules out there that you can get to create forms. This particular form was based on a request that the client had to have an automated email sent out on a specific sectional requirement. So if they're interested in specific solutions, they wanted specific emails sent out. So, and I can't remember the name of the module maker. I'm sorry, I wish I could plug you. But it's actually called the Inquiry module, and I'm sure if you look on Snow Covered, you could find it. This one is the Inquiry module that I went in and sort of and rehashed almost all of the HTML ACX layer and then reskinned it with CSS, so it cleaned it up a little bit different. But that's what it is the Inquiry module. And what this particular one does is it allows you to set up a series of categories, and then for each category you can set up an auto-response email. And so what this is intended on doing is the ability to gather a little bit of information from your visitors before you provide, let's say, a little bit more sensitive information. So not private information, but information that you don't want out to anybody unless you know sort of who they are. So once they fill in this information, then they're sent the an automated email response. That gets logged in a database, that gets sent as an email, you can report against it, so you can see who's requested what things and what categories are most often requested. But in general, if I could plug somebody else that I think makes great forms is DNN Modules. Richard over at DNN Modules has a great module called the Form Creator, and it's sort of a jack of all trades for creating forms that could either act as surveys or act as form collection mechanism. So you can set any types of fields, set drop downs, set radio buttons, and all through a web browser. In fact, one of my clients is technically savvy enough, they've created a couple of forms on their own and love it. And all those go into a form repository that you can then reuse later in other sections.
Okay, did you have to make any changes to .NET Nuke, such as in the core code, in order to fit your web design needs?
I would say that, well, the easy answer is no. And in my opinion, never, 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 never make changes to the core. That being said, yes, we've made core changes. But not for this site, actually. There was the ability in .NET Nuke 2.0 to have users, the same user, span across portals. And so in a couple of our implementations of .NET Nuke, there was the ability to, or the need of the client, let's say, to have a single sign-on have different roles and different access rights in a group of portals. Let's say a group of portals that they were managing. So this was a manager of this set of portals. Well, with the change in the membership model from 2.0 to 3.0, that went away. And so we do have a couple of instances out there of a modified core that sort of brings that back. So, you know, that was one of the things that sort of got lost in the DNN 3. Before I say anything else, kudos to the core team. They've done a fabulous job. It's really a wonderful product to work with, and more power to them. They've done a great job, and I hope to see DNN become a flying success because of all their hard work. That being said, I think that was it was a major loss for us to lose the ability to sort of have single sign-on into multiple portals, and that's why we did do a core change in those instances. But I would say for 99% of the people, if you're thinking about changing the core, then you're probably going about your IT decisions and your architectural decisions a bit askew, because I think that the core team has done a fabulous job of providing a framework that you can pretty much do anything within as long as you're thinking about it in the right fashion.
What's the plan for managing the future of the website in terms of content management and managing .NET Nuke updates?
You know, as some of the larger module developers get bigger and start integrating third-party DLLs into their systems, I've noticed we actually run, our business model is a designer hoster integrator model. So if you need website design, we'll do that. If you need hosting, we do the design and hosting. And if you need solutions provided, we'll do the design, hosting, and integration. And in some of those larger projects, I'm finding a couple of caveats that I would say, you know, if you start heading into that integration model, you really have to look out for two different module developers that rely on different versions of third-party DLLs and or different compatibility versions. And if you're stepping into areas where two or three modules need to interoperate together, I think DNN 3 has really introduced some tools for that haven't been implemented quite yet. Sort of the iListener interface is one of them. So you can have sort of this global event listener that modules can pass functions and parameters from module to module around. But it's tricky. And if any of the core team members are listening out there, I'm gonna make a blatant request right now, which is, as a hoster, there's a couple of things that get really difficult. One is to tell what module of what version you're running, and so you got to be really careful when you're sticking modules on, and a lot of these sort of smaller module developers will literally rev. You know, you'll get 8 to 10 different versions sent at you in 2 weeks, you know, and so you don't know what version on what instance is running, and there's really no way to tell on the page instance. So that would be a great thing to put in the settings page of the module, is, hey, what module is this and what version is it? The other one is, and I don't know if you're done any of the premium module support, Lee, but DNN has the ability to offer certain modules as premium support. And for a monthly fee, you can add this module. Well, one of the unfortunate things in DNN is every time you upgrade your modules, all the premium modules get set back into unpremium wide open modules. And so if you're dealing with something larger, like DNN modules portal store, for instance, you know, the portal store has about 15 modules inclusive of creating the store, different pieces of the store. And so every time there's a change there, a version change there, you have to update 15 modules, and you have to go remember which site had those as a premium module, and then you got to remember to sort of set them all back at premium. So I would say if you can get away with fewer modules and knowing fewer modules and what they can do in a more in-depth manner, you're probably better off than buying. And let me tell you from experience, I think I've bought every module available on Snowcovered. Better off than trying to sort of do the kitchen sink approach of getting all of these different types of modules and trying to learn them and trying to reskin them, because a lot of them, the layouts aren't necessarily designed to be skinned well. And a good CSS person will tell you, oh man, you just don't have the ability to change the layout on this because of the way that the ACX is written. So I don't know if that answered the question, but certainly in picking modules is get to know the base core DNN modules before you think about buying too many of the premium modules. And then when you do, make sure they're going to be compatible and more importantly, that the module developers that you're buying them from are large enough that they're going to be able to support them.
Yeah, there's definitely some good advice there. Just going back to the question, is there any plan for managing the future of the website in terms of content management?
That is actually up to the client. That's a service that we do offer, is to manage the content for them. But one of the things that I have to constantly remind my clients is I'm not a domain expert. And a domain expert, what that means is, I don't know your business. So if you were talking about brain surgery, there's no way I could keep your content fresh on brain surgery simply because I don't know about it. Very similar to the cryo response site. I know nothing about liquid nitrogen. So I'm going to be the last person that is going to be able to put content on. However, that being said, there's a wonderful technique that we've started using in .NET Nuke, which is the ability to change the page visibility settings of a module to administrators only. And in fact, for some of my clients, I don't give them complete administrator access. I create a role called editor and then allow them on certain pages to all create the module for them and sort of let them fill in the content. But it's only available to editors. So that gives them the sort of the first pass to start writing and filling out the content, then I come back as a designer and clean it up for them. So add the images, make sure that the styles match the styles in the rest of the site, change the layout if it needs it, things like that. And that's a service that they can do or that we can provide for them.
Okay, let's turn to the promotion of a website then. Do you carry any search engine promotion out for your clients?
Other than actually creating banner ads for them and monitoring the affiliates that come in through those banner ads, probably not much. We're more of a design house than we are a PR and marketing house. However, we do, for a few of our clients, run, I think I had mentioned it before, Google ads for them, and we do manage it in-house, trying to find the best keywords at the right prices. So that we can market it in that way. But we're not really big enough of a house at this point to do a complete PR coverage, because a lot of times the marketing of a website is not just on the internet, but it's through print, it's through sales channels, it's through networking. There's many, many ways that it takes to get your website marketed.
Do you use any techniques in the initial design stages of a website to ensure that it is search engine friendly?
It used to be more important in the past. I mean, since we've moved to the friendly URL methodology in DNN, with the ability to add keywords and descriptions on a per-page basis, I would say that DNN has sort of taken care of a lot of that for you. There are some modules that you can buy. I know that assist for spidering. They actually detect the header of some of the spiders and they can provide specific links for them. We tried a few of those and didn't see any significant response. I did notice, this is a fairly technical response, but when they moved the view state, which is that large clump of encrypted text from the top of the HTML all the way to the bottom, I noticed that we had a fairly significant increase in spidering going on and hits to the web pages showing up a little bit better in some of the sites that we monitor with Web Position Gold.
Okay, it's top tips time. Do you have any final tips that you could give the listeners for designing a .NET Nuke website, especially from the initial drawing board stage?
Well, if you've been listening there, I think I dropped a couple of golden nuggets along the way. One is go buy a template from Tyler, simply for the CSS and the back end to see how it's done. Number one, you'll get a great skin to begin with. Number two, you'll see how it gets translated from ACX, and the ACX converses with the CSS. And then try changing some of that CSS to make sure that you're getting what you want. The other is to search snow-covered for a couple of good containers that are going to be sort of reusable across a lot of different sites and different industries. And then, just spend time administrating DNN, knowing how it works from inside and out. I think, those are gonna get you the furthest bang for the buck. Right off the bat is if you don't know how to do, great design work, then borrow from someone that does. And I think there are a couple of, if you look around the .NET Nuke community, there are a couple of really good designers out there, so they should be rewarded for the time and effort that they put into to selling some of the skins that they sell. And they're easy enough to rip off, but hey, it takes time for those people to put that together. So buy one and really learn from it would be my tip or suggestion. And learn Photoshop. If you don't know Photoshop, learn it, because for the most part, you can create anything in it, and it's the tool of the trade.
Well, Brad, thanks for all of that really useful information. I'm sure our listeners will have enjoyed hearing about your process for creating .NET Nuke websites. To finish off, is there anything you would like to tell the listeners? For instance, what projects you are currently working on?
I've got a couple of great projects that I'm working on. Unfortunately, they're under some pretty tight non-disclosures. So, but if you go to the Schaefer Group site, which is www.theschaefergroup.com, we'll be announcing them when they're released. And there's some pretty significant projects. One is expected to have close to 100,000 portals launched inside of it probably within the next 6 months. So that's probably one of the bigger projects that I've been working on, and it's actually using one of the modified core pieces that I had talked about with the sort of the cross portal pieces. Other than that is kudos to the core team. They've provided a great product and certainly saved me thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and man hours and time of things that shouldn't have to be written and reinvented. And so kudos to them. And I think, Lee, you've done a great job, and I hope that that your website continues to grow and we see some great new tips from you as well.
Yeah, sure. Great, thanks for that. Hopefully we'll speak again soon then and talk about your new projects with your 100,000 portals then.
Yes, and hopefully I can take you on a tour. Not through all of them, of course.
But, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Lee.
Okay, thank you too.